silent in that first, that's not a problem.
It already was silent. It was already giving me the silent fader, just like home.
Same damn thing.
It's okay.
Good. Good evening and welcome to the Town of Discovery Bay regular meeting of the Board of Directors. At this time, I'd like to call this meeting to order. If we could all rise and follow along with the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please.
President Steele.
Present.
Vice President Graves.
Here.
Director Madison.
Here.
Director Simon.
Here.
Director Tatro.
Here.
Excellent, thank you. At this time, public comments. Individual public comments will be limited to a 3-minute time limit. During the public comments section, the public may address the board on any issue within the district's jurisdiction, which is not on the agenda. The public may comment on any item on the agenda that is before the board for consideration. Any person wishing to speak must come up to the and speak from the podium. There's going to be no dialogue between the board and the commenter. Any clarifying questions from the board must go through the chair. At this time, I'd like to open public comment. I have a request here from Mr. Mankin, please.
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board. We're all pretty much aware of the fire hydrant going down fairly miserably last night. I've been pretty engaged on that. We've gone to all the meetings and kind of have a pretty good handle on what the impact of that is going to be. And I just want to make you aware of that and ask for some of your help for your community here. Because of the failure, they're basically going to be kicked into Plan B. And Plan B is only a choice between a 3-station or a 4-station model. That's the only thing that's on the table available to them. 4-station would be a 2-man engine company. 3-station would be 3-man engine companies. Discovery Bay is, to the best of my understanding, on the table for both of them. We would maintain the station open at 59, but it is the difference between a 2- and a 3-man engine. And if you will go back in time, you recall the North Point situation we had a few years ago. It's pretty ugly when a 2-man engine shows up at such a big fire, because it really can't do much until that second engine gets there. At least with a 3-man engine, you have a chance to do something, try and knock it down. Under all scenarios, it's going to be ugly. We're just really picking 2 flavors of ugly here. That second engine in and support is going to be a long ways away. And if one of the 2 remaining engines happens to be on a medical, it's going to be an even longer wait. So I ask for your support as board members that represent the community of Discovery Bay to please consider attending the meeting next Monday night, where they are going to weigh in on the 4-3. And there is a push in the background from the Brentwood contingent to do 4, and obviously center the resources in Brentwood. So it's in our best interest to advocate on behalf of our community. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else like to comment? Okay, nobody else has a comment. At this time, public comments closed. Turn it over to staff for presentations.
We have 10 this evening.
Okay. Let's see, I'd like to have the sheriff's office report, please.
Yes, sir.
So thanks to Tony back there. He runs all our stats for us, so he's been really good at getting the marine details on. I'll start with that. There are actually, generally, there are more marine patrol details than what show on this. The reason is that Marine Patrol incidents, much like automobile accidents, can take a while to document. They're not as simple as crime reports because there are diagrams to be drawn and other facts to be put in. So the ones that come in here are the ones that can be documented fairly quickly. They're usually more than what's here, but they trail for a couple of months because it takes time to get all the documents together before the report is finalized, and it won't show up on the stat sheet until all the paperwork's done. So it's not a complete snapshot, but at least it gives you an idea. The obvious thing is we have an accident, two DUIs, and a moving violation. This tells you it's getting into the boating season again, and people out there being silly. So just trying to emphasize, as I told you, everybody here before, emphasize, you know, be responsible when you're out boating. Don't drink. Because I remind everybody, everyone's familiar with the .08 for driving a vehicle. In boating, there is no, you know, .01 is enough. If you're have any alcohol in your system and you're not operating the boat safely, that's enough for a boating under the influence. So it's not the same standard as driving. So keep that in mind for anybody who boats. So RDA's office generally looks to the same standard, but it's not an absolute requirement. So just keep that in mind when you're out boating. But the fines and penalties are all the same. Now, as far as the crime stats, fairly flat for this month. We had a few property crimes that totaled about again, they on the vast majority of them, situations where property was either left out in the open or things were left unsecured and people got in. So just as a reminder to make sure we lock everything and don't leave things in plain view. It's always good advice, especially this time of year. Summertime, more people out, people coming into the area from outside, and it can create more problems. I'm still pleased to see people calling in with suspicious circumstance calls. Those are all generated by people calling us saying something doesn't look right, and I encourage everyone to keep doing that. The only thing is Tony pointed out, because he was checking some of the calls themselves, looking in greater detail. The only problem we're running into is some people are waiting anywhere from a couple of hours to a couple of days to call something in, and while we appreciate that, it's not all that helpful because 2 days later, there's not much I can do with that. So we're encouraging people, you know, resist that temptation to say, oh, it's probably not a big deal. You know, I'll call it in later. Call it in right now, because if we can catch somebody doing something wrong, obviously we'd rather address it then than try to recreate something 2 or 3 days later. So, but I'm still glad people are calling. No complaints there. The only thing I know that people have been asking me about is made the news, is all the drug busts throughout the area. To be honest with you, I don't have a lot of detail on that. It's a federal case, it's not ours. We're the supporting agency because we're the local agency, but the DEA was the lead agency in that, and they're not really sharing a lot of information. The only little tidbits they shared was that it was mostly marijuana related, and that there were quite a bit of assets seized under the law. Now, obviously, the courts have to just, you know, figure out what to do with all of that, but it's been a lengthy operation. What they told me, so it wasn't just an overnight thing. They've been at it for, I'm sure you can tell from the news, quite some time. So that's really all I have for the stats. Thank goodness.
Thank you, because Tony usually stands up here for hours and just rattles on.
I know, that's why I made him stand back there today.
Appreciate that, AJ.
No problem.
I have a question, Ted. In the past, the Sheriff's Department has been pretty proactive in getting the trailer out on Highway 4. Indicating that the fireworks are illegal. You know, we're going to be getting that again.
We are not. It's not available to us this year, so we're not going to be able to have that out here. So it's we're just going to have to go with enforcement. Okay, thank you.
I got nothing for you. Thanks, AJ.
All right. All right, excellent. Thank you very much.
Fire report, please.
Make a way to laugh.
That's what I wanted to get on the file. Get on the server.
Wow.
I'm Battalion Chief Burst, Police Tactical Fire. I
known as Battalion 5, who's cut across the fire. Here to give the call reports for the month of May. There were 27 medicals, 5 structure fires, 4 vegetation fires. It is the beginning of wildland season. 6 auto accidents, 5 fire alarms, 2 public service, a odor and a smoke investigation. We are down 51 calls, or 251 calls, 69 for the month of April. Anybody have any questions?
You guys do the rest of the month. You should have the month off.
Yes. Medical calls were down. Excellent. Structure fires were up. We had a rash of fires in Bethel Island.
Yeah, we lost 2 houses. 2.5?
3.
3?
3.
Are these where 59 is a primary, or just if we move up?
Your engine company does respond. I see some new faces. You belong in an area that has a county agency that provides an umbrella of protection. So you have fire engines. If there's a fire in Discovery Bay, that will come as far away as Bethel Island, Brentwood, Oakley, or Antioch. Conversely, if one of these other areas gets a fire, your engine will leave. So that's why it's so important to dial 911 and not just show up at the fire station. You still have a problem with people stopping by fire stations, including the one on Discovery Bay Boulevard, and not seeing a fire engine there. So, dial 911.
I got nothing for you, man.
Please show up, fire board meeting, June 11th.
Thank you.
All right, thank you very much. Supervisor Pipo's office report, please.
Good evening, and here from Supervisor Pipo's office. A couple of you look familiar. Just a couple of things to share with you. The county in part is taking place in a load modification clinic, which is free for residents. It is this Saturday, June 9th, from 9 a.m. to 12:30 at the Walnut Creek Civic Park Community Center, located in Walnut Creek. I can leave this flyer for you. It is put on in part with the Contra Costa CDB grant monies. So I will leave that with you guys. My next thing is I have the Spring 2012 Public Works Current Projects flyer that they put out, so I will leave several with you guys as well. And lastly, just wanted to let you know we had code enforcement last month. They are working on several issues in Discovery Bay, particularly calls with regards to boats and trailers in driveways. Patty Cook, Senior Code Enforcement Officer, is cognizant that it is the time when people are transitioning, but if there are long-term boats and trailers in driveways, she will be notifying the property or homes, tagging them. That is it for me, unless there's anything from you guys.
Jim, do you have any questions?
No, I do not.
Virgil?
Nope.
Go ahead, Virgil.
Question, you attend the code enforcement meetings?
Yes.
Would you mind, there's a cross on the home, on the back of the home, on Bixler Road. I'm not sure if they're becoming a church, or they're just trying to promote religion.
Okay.
But I don't believe that, I mean, it's out there playing
with
you. A huge cross in the back of a house. And I think they have a light on it at nighttime.
I can definitely have
some sort of they're on a yacht, but the back of the house is Bixler.
Okay.
Perfect.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I had a question on your code enforcement for parking. What is the county's time frame on when someone can park in the street before you'll cite?
72 hours.
No, I don't know the specific code to that. I can get you that information.
72 hours
is what I'm hearing from the sheriff's department.
That's very good. Call us, the sheriff's department. On the street. Private property.
Thank you.
How's the East County office property coming together? Did they close escrow on that? The East County of Technology in Brownsville.
Oh, the East County Government Center?
Yes.
I believe so, but I can get you an update at the next meeting.
All right, thank you very much. Highway Patrol report, please.
Hello.
Hey, howdy.
Good. Officer Godwin with Highway Patrol. The Highway Patrol, as I told you guys probably many times, we concentrate quite a bit on the school zones. And we're starting to find a trend that we tend to be catching a lot of teachers speeding through the school zone. As a matter of fact, that work at the school that we're working in front of. Which just goes further to a comment that I made a few months back, that a lot of the people that are complaining are the same ones that we're catching. So, again, I would ask if you guys can spread the word at all to your neighbors and what have you, that you guys can police yourselves. It makes things a lot easier. And some of the teachers are pretty nasty, actually, about the fact that we're going to write them a ticket for speeding in front of their school. Like, somehow they own that space, and we shouldn't be able to do that. Nevertheless, last month we wrote 93 citations out here in the Discovery Bay area. Out of that, 51 of them were what we call primary collision factors. They were speed, falling too close, maybe unsafe lane change. But majority of it is speed, and the majority of that is in front of the schools, Newport Drive and Clifford. Those are our big complaint areas, and we spend quite a bit of our time there. We did arrest 8 DUI drivers. That's a little bit high. I don't normally see the stats that high out here, but it could have something to do with the holiday weekend that we had. There's a lot of factors. It's getting warmer, obviously. And some of those numbers are likely to change here now that the kids are about to get out of school. So that's the stats from the Highway Patrol. There's rumor going around about our substation that we have out here in Brentwood being closed. We're no longer going to deploy from there. I've heard that might be as soon as August 1st, but again, that's a rumor that's going around. And it obviously started somewhere. The same officers will be assigned to the area. It'll be the same beat deployment as far as we're concerned, so it wouldn't be that you guys wouldn't be getting as many officers necessarily. The place that they start in their shift is going to be Martinez and not out here, which it seems like everything happens at shift change, and that's an inconvenience to you folks, obviously, and everybody that's out here. So that hasn't happened yet. We keep our fingers crossed that that something will come through, and it won't, but as of now, that's the direction it's going. So that's unfortunate, but like I said, it shouldn't diminish any services that you guys do. The same number of officers will be here the same day. If there's not any questions, go ahead.
I imagine that what that would do mean is that the time here might be cut down a bit because you're starting in Martinez, so you have a longer commute
right. To
start your activities in our area. That would be an obvious assumption.
That's correct. And the shift will start, day shift starts at 5:30 in the morning. Typically what they do out here is those guys, there was never a graveyard car per se that worked out here from the Brentwood station. They always came from Martinez. So the day shift car that started always started an hour earlier than everybody else. And that was to provide coverage out here when the graveyard car had to go all the way back to Martinez. And they're probably going to do something similar to that, where they're going to adjust the shift for the guys that come out here an hour earlier, we hope. But until the August schedule comes out, nobody knows.
And then the other thing that I would bring to your attention, as long as we're talking about school zones, is that if you guys are short on income for a month, I would suggest you just go over here to Discovery Bay School and write tickets for illegal left-hand turns during school hours, because every time, many times, they don't care. And the problem is it's well marked. They don't seem to respond to, I've noticed some people honking horns, I wouldn't do that, of course, but I've noticed some other people, they don't seem to respond well to that. And they'll sit right across the lane because that parking lot's full, which is why the sign is there. So just, okay. You're probably well aware of it, but 2:30, obviously that's gonna go away here for
the first
8 weeks
of school,
but
it's always good to know for a start. Is it in the morning and afternoon, by the way?
I notice it more in the afternoon than I do in the morning.
I notice it.
So it's both. Okay. No problem. That's that makes it easy for us.
Because during school hours tells me that it shouldn't happen before, it shouldn't happen after 8, and it shouldn't happen before 3.
Right.
Okay.
We can handle that.
You've seen the report that the sheriff's office do. Do you have one? Have you?
We don't. This is a stat sheet that comes from our division office, which is in Vallejo, and it's basically just a select beat. It's a bunch of numbers that the numbers coincide with certain roads in the county, and
so nothing that we would understand.
No, I mean, probably not. And I get this one copy from them. I could ask them more, but the state is not real happy about handing out papers. So
how far do you cover between here and Tracy?
We stop at Old River Bridge right here.
But when you go down Byron Highway, how far do you?
We go down to Lindeman.
Okay.
So we'll cross over into Alameda County just a little bit, and then right before San Joaquin is where we stop.
Okay.
And then I forgot what I was going to ask.
I'll go ahead and take over for a second while you're thinking about it.
Go ahead.
So you guys have changed up your days for the stop signs and the clipper in the Newport?
A little bit, yeah.
Have you seen anything different, or is everyone still behaving?
Everybody's pretty good. I mean, my partner worked out here specifically this morning because, again, the program that I work on, we're assigned to afternoon, and we have the liberty to come in early when we find complaints early, like the school. So we do switch it up from time to time. He was out here early this morning, which is not normal for us to be out here early. And I won't say that it was any better or worse. He wrote the same number of tickets he normally does.
Mm-hmm.
But you just get a different clientele. It's a different crowd, a little bit different area, a little bit different excuse.
Yep.
But it's the same violations. Sometimes it takes longer, sometimes it doesn't. So it doesn't seem to be getting worse, though.
Yeah, okay.
Now you switched to a new scheduling model. Has that happened yet?
As far as the days that we come out here?
No, you guys said we're going to have some new shift change about 3 months ago. You were talking about you guys have a new shift hours.
Oh, they were switching to, when we started to work a 10-hour shift schedule,
right.
We went from having 6 shifts a day to 5 right. to 3. Right now they're settled in on 3. And they start, the morning shift starts out here actually at 4:30 in the morning. And it goes till 2:30, and then the afternoon shift obviously starts right when that one ends. Those, like I said, those times might change when they do away with our substation out here, but only time will tell.
Is it working out for you guys?
It is. Okay. Yeah, we were a trial area, we were a test area for 10-hour shifts for the Highway Patrol. They gave us the option, and we started last July. So this July will mark the 1-year test period. That's what they said. You'll test it for a year. We'll review your stats and, you know, figures and costs and all the stuff that the state has to do to see if it's viable for us to use it full time. And it must have been going good because they gave us the option to continue it while they evaluate the numbers. Where the last time they did this with 12-hour shifts, they said, oh, end of the year, stop, back to 8s, and then we'll tell you if you can do it or not. Sounds good, but they're doing it statewide. So just because our stuff's working out, maybe somebody else is.
I don't see any air patrol in East County, is there?
Pretty rare.
It's high density population.
Well, just they do it based on
helicopter. I'll see it.
And our helicopter, they're probably more in the right down the center of the Bay Area. Okay. They're coming out here, but their hours have been cut pretty bad because it's an incredible cost to put that air helicopter up. And it's not the wage of the guys; it's the repair of that plane or the ongoing maintenance. But they are up. But usually, when we call them for something. They're coming from the airport, which is in Napa.
Okay.
And by the time they could get out here, whatever we needed them for is perfect. So that's perfect.
Where's the plane out in the valley? It's in Lodi, isn't it?
The valley plane comes from Executive Air in Sacramento.
Oh, does it? Okay.
Yeah, which for you guys is probably much closer than the guy coming from Napa, because half the time they're in Napa, you call them and they can't pick off the phone.
Right.
So. Same frustration we have when we'd like them to help us chase down a car. We're down for fog. So, there's nothing else.
All right.
Thank you.
All right. Hey, Tony, do you have anything you need to report on or want to report on?
No.
Okay. All right.
I got a a quick question for Tony. Hey, if the helicopters come out here for the Marine helicopters or the sheriffs or the Coast Guard or anything like that, first flight, would that show up in this report or not?
No. Simple reason, because the reports that I get are linked to system that we use for all our calls and services.
Right.
And then when they're in the air, they're in the air. I mean, you can hear them call for the helicopter. And stuff, but
yeah.
It won't be in the reports that are written, but you won't be able to see them.
Right. Okay.
All right. Do we have any committee reports tonight? I don't see any.
Yeah,
okay, go ahead.
No, this is a budget committee.
All right.
That's under. Oh, that's under the.
No problem. Transplant?
No.
County planning? Code enforcement?
Heard.
Special districts? Okay, no reports tonight. At this time, I'd like to make a motion that we approve the consent calendar.
I'll make a motion we approve the consent calendar.
I'll second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Any public comment on the consent calendar? Sorry.
I did.
Moving a little fast there. Thank you.
No, you guys don't usually get a question about this. I had under your invoices, just so that I kind of understand, there's an item number 4, 5, and 6. Lundorf and Scalamini, I'm not sure if I pronounced that right. Total of $29,000 with three different invoices. And I'm just wondering if you give me a thumbnail sketch of the time frame that these invoices cover and just a little bit of what that is. We got a well.
Ludorf and Scalamini is our district's water engineering firm. They are under contract to us to provide our anything that needs to take place with respect to our drinking water system. These bills refer to well 5A testing. We're having some issues with well 5A. They've been working with Veolia and town staff on upgrading our chemical room right outside in the building over here. And then we are also under contract to them for a water level monitoring program where they monitor our wells, the transducers, and our well levels and elevations.
Yeah, I can appreciate that, but how long is that? Is this for a contract for a year? Is this a month? Is this
some of it's annual, some of the contracts are broken into, for example, we have on the agenda this evening, a contract proposed with them for an item. So it would be for that project.
Correct. Well, I was just wondering about these, specifically these three right here.
The first one is the specific project was authorized by the board. The second one is under their general scope of work, and the third one is, I believe, it's under the general scope of work also. It's under their contract to provide those services to us when we need them.
Well, and I can appreciate all that. I'm just trying to get from a public standpoint. If you're testing for water, $15,000 for the test, whatever that scope of work is that like six guys for 4 days or one guy for a week and a half? Or
Virgil, why don't you come up to the mic and explain to Mr. Peace how that process works?
As Rick had indicated, it is for multiple tasks that they're doing. Just coincidentally, for Ludolf, a lot of the tasks came together. I believe some of it is remnants from our water master plan, the tail end of that. The monitoring of the wells is a year project. It actually will probably go into multiple years. And some of it is one time or actually during a couple of months. We generally have a 1 year, 2 year contract with Ludolf and another engineering firm called Irwin. And they're on there for when they're back, our beck and call, our engineers.
Yeah, and that would be fine. I'm just trying to get a handle on $29,000 for 1 month or
just, it's over a period of time. I'd say 2 months maybe, but it's just coincidentally all that came together. Most of it is subs. They hire subs to bring in, and I believe that I'm not sure, the biggest one is probably Well 5A, and we've had to bring in a huge amount of subcontractors under them to look at and understand.
And they put a burden on that subcontractor rate also.
That's very true.
Any other public comment?
Well,
in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
New business, I'll turn it over to staff.
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board. The item before you this evening is to authorize a contract with the aforementioned Ludorf and Scalmanini in the amount of $111,000 to conduct well number 7 preliminary engineering, exploratory test building, test boring, and monitoring well installations. As you are all aware, well 7 was included in the water master plan. It is being proposed to meet a couple of needs. One is to meet our small deficiency that we have in our requirements with the state. The second with Title 22, but more importantly, I think from our minds, is that it provides a long-term sustainable water source for the community. Well 7 is proposed to be located over off of Newport Drive. It's approximately 3,000 feet south of the existing water treatment plant. It would tie into an existing distribution line, so there'd be some cost savings there. One of the concerns that Ludorf has with the site is that it is marginally smaller than what the DPH, Department of Public Health, recommends by about 5 feet. They've indicated to me that in the past they've had variances that have been issued by the department for areas that are even further away than that, more than 5 feet, I should say. So they don't anticipate any issues, but they have to have 50 feet from the nearest residence and 50 feet from the nearest water source. And if you look at some of our wells that are located throughout town, we have them literally right on the water, and we have them right next door to home. So we don't expect that to be an issue. However, we will get all the authorizations from the Department of Health prior to moving forward with the second phase, which is the exploratory test building or test boring and the monitoring well installations. If you turn to the third page from the back of the package, it's titled page 11 of their proposal. Task item number 1 and 2, is what this proposal covers for well 7. The suitability assessment, conceptual design, California, the Department of Health memo, the exploratory test hole drilling, oversight evaluation, water quality testing. So those two items totaled $111,000. The remaining portion of it would come back to the board for authorization at a later date. So with that, if the board has any questions, I'd be more than happy to answer them.
Go ahead, Mike.
A year ago, we set up $40,000 to put a deposit like you and all of a sudden. We never had a meeting to decide to drill well 7. The issue of Title 22, it moved because for 30 grand we can fix our 200 gallon efficiency. So when did we decide we were going to go ahead and build well 7 without the board discussing it?
You are discussing it this evening. Well, we're asking for authorization to move forward in that. One of the issues that we're having right now with well 5 is that there's a strong likelihood that we will be having to there's a strong possibility that we may have to abandon well 5. We're having some serious issues with it, as you've been made well aware of, with some high salt contents. We anticipate having the final report from Ludorf next week on that. Even if we were to start the process today, it would still take 2 years before it's completed. And it's a concern of mine as your general manager that we have a long-term sustainable water source for this community. And well 7, I think, might end up replacing well 5A in the long run, and well 8 may be the well that ends up providing additional resources for future growth. So that is some of the reasons why staff is proposing to move well 7 forward tonight.
I believe that we should have a meeting with the engineer and discuss well 5 before we start building well 7. I agree that we eventually will need it, but at this point, you know, my feeling is you have developers who come into town. Rather than have the residents pay for it, I'd rather see the developers pay for it. And we've had this conversation 100 times. And if it could be put off long enough for them to have to start building, they will put up some money towards the wall. just start looking at making ground building. Is that once we start this, we're going to build it?
I recognize that, and that would be staff's recommendation to move the law forward. Certainly, that's the board's that's in the board's pleasure.
I would, well, first let me read an article that came out of the Chowchilla City Spotlight, which is very relevant to what we're talking about here. The city of Chowchilla water wells are aged, and from time to time, several are temporarily out of service due to mechanical or other problems. The water system is struggling to provide adequate water during periods of peak demand, especially during summer months. All of the city's water is provided by 8 wells. And it goes on to talk about the infrastructure and how wells have a lifespan. This is the same situation that Discovery Bay is in. Secondly, there's been a history of the boards prior to this current board of putting things off, which is why we had to have a 38% increase in our water rates over the last 2 years, because this board has, the board previous to this board has had a habit of saying, let's just wait. Let's not do anything. Let's wait until something happens or it's mandatory or whatever, instead of being proactive. And I do not agree that we should be waiting for something to happen before we take action, because none of this stuff happens instantaneously. It all takes planning, and it all takes, like we said, 2 years to put, the developer's gonna pay their fair share when the developers build. It doesn't matter if they pay it today or they pay it when they build. They're gonna pay their fair share when they build. And so I personally don't feel that that's an issue. I don't understand how that's an issue. I didn't address the question to you.
Oh, good. You're asking. I made the statement. You're questioning my statement, so I was going to give you the answer, so you wouldn't have to stumble like this.
Go ahead, Kevin.
Are you done?
No, oh, absolutely.
Okay.
I can't wait to hear what you say next.
Keep going. It's your floor. You have the chair.
So I would propose that, in fact, I question whether $111,000 is enough, because that's going to take us through year 2013, which is a year away. And if it's a two-year process, why are you only asking for $70,000 for next year?
I'm not asking for $70,000 for next year. In the proposed budget and five-year capital that is being transmitted to you this evening, the $40,000 of the $111,000 would come out of this current year's fiscal budget. The $71,000 would come out of next year's budget. The balance of the design is also programmed and budgeted for next year in the proposed preliminary budget. So there is sufficient funds to complete the entire design next fiscal year. This is the first phase of it. Like I said, the remaining of the $249,000 for the entire process to do all the preliminary work and all the design work, all the test boards, everything else, all the CEQA compliance, that's all in the proposed budget for next fiscal year.
Okay, thank
you. So what I'm asking for this evening is, let's get the, if we could start the process with the $40,000 for this year, and then next fiscal year, starting on July 1st, we could then encumber the $71,000, assuming the board approves the budget.
Understood, thank you.
Go ahead.
Can I ask Virgil to talk about the state of our wells?
No. Go ahead, Mark.
What kind of information do you want on the wells?
Well, you know, Kevin brought up the fact that, you know, some of them, they have a lifespan. How are ours doing? Do you see, besides 5?
6 is your newest one, the one here on site.
Yep.
Here, and that just got put in a year ago or brought online. Well, number 5A has been a nuisance to the district for quite a while. It was drilled in the early 90s. It has had some work done in the sense that when you do a well, you put a steel casing down inside there. Well, 5A has had some modifications where something is ate away at the casing, so you've had to put in kind of like a small sleeve on the inside and press it against the wall to stop the water from coming in and contaminating your lower aquifer water that you're pulling up to send to your treatment plant. Right now, with the recent test, we have noticed for a couple of years, TDS, total dissolved solids, has been climbing slightly, but gone down, come back up for well number 5, and that's the only well that has as high TDS. The state limit right now is 1,000 parts per million, and we did a recent test there, and we've been pulling around 12 to 1,800 parts per million. So in essence, the only way we could lower that is to blend it in with another well. In this case, we bring well 5 up when it comes online to run the pump. We bring in 4A at the same time. It blends in, so it dilutes. Dilutes it, correct, yeah. Thank you. And so we get under that number of 1,000. So we're scratching our head trying to understand why is it just this one well and not the others. So we did a full-blown test a few weeks ago where we put in a tube while the well is running and periodically started down at around the 400-foot level, pulled it up at certain intervals, sucked the water up at a certain interval, and we have found at 2 different spots TDS spiked right up to 4,000. Hmm. So there is a problem there. Now, I gave warning to Rick saying, we have a problem on the horizon here that's going to, more than likely, I believe, force us to shut that well down. And in earnest here, I think Director Mark Simon is correct. We ought to bring the engineers in. They can explain to you what the problem is, probably more so than I could. And but I believe we as a district have a problem starting to brew a well 5 in.
And 5 is one of our highest producing wells, correct?
It was the best producing well for you until we brought well 6 in.
Right.
Correct.
Yep.
And now it's not to say well 7, if you did a test hole, that it won't do the same thing. It could very well do the same thing. We don't know if we're going to get the yield. I mean, the yield is we want something at least 2,000 or more gallons a minute, and we don't know what the quality of the water is going to be.
What about the other 3 wells?
The other 4 wells?
Well, we got 1 here. We talked about 5.
You got 5, 4. The other ones are doing fine. Our oldest one in the system is well 2.
Right.
Well 2 is next to the fire station there. And it's our lowest producing, probably about 800 to 1,000 gallons a minute, but it's cranking out. And once in a while, we have an electrical issue, and it's really a PG&E issue. But outside of that, it's cranking away.
Go ahead. Well, a couple of comments. Number one is the problem. One of the problems is that well 6 is here, well 7 will be over there, and well 5 is over there, and these waters aren't, they don't mix. We don't have a pipe that we can take. We can't bring well 6 water back to that side. So I would get this well. However, because of the issues with well 5, and we're right at the edge, I'm kind of for it, but when will you, will our vendor tell us about
L5? He sent me an email yesterday indicating that he has all the final data. He's compiling it right now. He was getting some information, I believe, from Veolia. I believe that was sent over today, and I believe that we should be receiving the first part of the week.
Well, I don't have a problem with waiting until the next meeting in June if to hear from that vendor, if that would satisfy Director Simon's
The first part of this can still move forward. It's the Department of Health making sure we get the site. So maybe what we do is we just if it's the board's pleasure, then you could always break out the tasks. I would prefer to move it all forward and then hold them back if we want to do that, because I think we need to get this well moving.
One other question for Virgil, if I might, as long as you're at the podium, Virgil. Have we noticed a consistent degradation in the volume of water that the wells are producing, the older wells? Have we noticed that the volumes have I mean, not drastically, but have been consistently coming down year to year to year as they get older?
The aquifer levels have been going down, but it's just not Discovery Bay. It is anybody who is in the aquifers. The level has been going down in most of the area here that have groundwater wells.
But my understanding from what Ludov from Skolman India told us in previous meetings that our actual production from those older wells is decreasing.
That's correct.
So
the efficiency of the motors and
exactly.
The pumps and so forth, correct.
As they age, they become less
my
efficient.
My fear is, gentlemen, is the fact that there may be a fix for 5. And but it's in the screens is where our problem is. It's coming right in the middle of the screens. The screen is where you have two, for well number five, you have two 30 or 40 foot screens that are really deep, and this is where the water comes into the pipe per se, and the pump sucks it up. In those screens is where we're getting this high TDS level coming in. Again, the limit's 1,000. More than likely, when we share this data with the state's going to say, you, Discovery Bay, need to fix that. And so we're trying to be proactive and say, all right, state, we have looked at this. These are our options that we're planning to proceed on. And I believe once we share that data with them, but we had test instruments that are not really state calibrated, but we also had lab results. I have not physically seen the lab results, but our handheld instruments did indicate we had a high amount of TDS, and then more than likely the lab results will say that. After talking with Ludoff yesterday and last week, they indicated it looks like we have found a problem. What we're trying to do is scratch our head as to how to fix it. Because we believe if you fix it, your yield production, the number of gallons, is going to go down. So then we're back. Remember on our water master plan, you had a deficiency. Now you'll be a bigger deficiency. It won't be just a couple hundred gallons. I believe it would be a lot more.
That test that you and I were talking about, and I'm not sure what the name of it is, but if you take your top producing well offline and you take the spike of the August.
Oh, peak demand.
Peak demand.
Uh-huh.
Do we meet that requirement right now?
No. We're just off by 100, 200 gallons.
Yeah. Okay.
And we were looking to modify well 1B to increase that, and we kind of held up a little bit on that right now. We still have it in the mill to work on it, but we've kind of taken a backseat because 5A is really important to us.
Yep.
And so that's where we're concentrating on that.
All right.
We have it scheduled with Ludorf after the heavy use season, so
in the fall
to go in and do the modifications to well 1B at that time.
Right.
Exactly.
It's on schedule.
Well, it would have been, but well 5 jumped ahead of it.
It's just like, you know, you had a broken down car, your most important car, we got to do something with it.
Sure. All right. Anybody like to make a motion?
Public.
Oh yeah, public comment, please. No comment.
I would like to make a motion that we take the recommended action as it's been recommended by staff, and that is to contract with Ludoff and Skolman and me to proceed with the testing for well 7.
I'll second that.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Anybody opposed?
Opposed.
Okay. Item 2.
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board. This evening, I think, is a watershed moment in the district, for the district, in that we're considering implementing the projects that were identified in the water and the wastewater master plans to move forward for construction. In developing this year's capital budget, we, instead of doing a one-year budget, we did a five-year budget based upon what was in the CIP, what was in the master plans, and then we broke those projects out by projects that we propose are projects for ongoing operations, so ongoing resources would pay for them almost on a regular basis. It's more operating expenses, but they're capital improvements. We also identified those projects that staff proposes to be included for financing, for long-term financing. Those projects total anywhere from $13.1 to $14.7 million in projects, depending on which action or which decision the board wants to go relative to one of the projects. And then the final component of the five-year CIP includes those projects that are driven by development. And so those would come online once development was starting to move forward. So this evening, what staff is proposing is to enter into engagement agreements with two firms, one being Kinsel Newcomb and De Dios for municipal bond underwriting services, as well as the Weiss Law Firm for bond counsel services, as well as to enter into an agreement with Standard & Poor's to obtain our district's credit rating, and then adopt a resolution authorizing those previous actions. Today's financial markets, we're witnessing some of the lowest interest rates in the last 50 years. They are at, comparatively speaking, they're a really good deal for us right now. We're unfortunately hitting the market in a bad economic time, but for us, it can provide very beneficial for the district in the long term. Like I indicated previously, we're looking at a $13.1 to $14.7 million issuance on either a 20 or 30 year term. I would recommend that we do a 30 year term, however we amortize into 20. That way it provides future boards and future staff some leeway and some leverage, providing them some flexibility in the future that we might not necessarily be able to identify today. All of the costs that are part of this transaction are all contingent upon the close of the transaction, with the exception of the Standard & Poor's bond rating. That is $15,000. It will be included in the overall closing costs. Unless the board decides that they do not want to move forward with it, we would then be on the hook for the $15,000. I'd like to introduce to you this evening Dan Maciello from the firm Kinsel Newcomb De Dios, and Cameron Weiss from the Weiss Law Firm. Both of them have extensive experience. Cameron has a lot of experience in this region, working with a lot of our neighbors, most recently today with Byron Bethany Irrigation District. Dan has recently worked with the City of Isleton. In fact, they both worked in the City of Isleton for refunding over there. So I'm going to introduce Dan at this point in time, then Cameron in a moment. And Dan is going to give an overview to the board and to the public of the process that will be taking place as we move the process forward. Dan?
Good evening. Thank you, Mr. Howard. I appreciate that. Good evening, President, members of the board. Very happy to be here in Discovery Bay tonight. As your general manager mentioned, the CSD is considering to implement a rather large capital improvement project, several capital improvement projects. And generally speaking, as most of us would do in our normal lives, if we're going to buy a house, we're going to buy a car, we don't generally pay out of current year's income for these large purchases. We finance them through a mortgage or a car loan. And that's what we're discussing for your consideration tonight, to authorize staff to move forward and begin a process to put together a financing package that would ultimately culminate in coming back to the board with the completed transaction documents and structure and suggested means of moving forward. And that will be at a subsequent meeting currently scheduled, if the board approves us to move forward tonight, for July 18th. That's a bit of a moving target, depending on what we come across during that process, because it's quite involved, the whole underwriting and structuring process. So I was asked to just give a quick overview of what a bond financing is, because it's not something that's done every day. I don't believe the district has ever done one at all. So if it pleases the board, I'd be happy to just kind of quickly give you about a 1,000-foot overview, and then if more details is requested, you have to answer any questions. So as I mentioned, the first step would be to authorize staff to enter into certain agreements with myself, bond counsel, all the fees associated with what we're going to do, what we would, you know, what we'd like to do, are contingent entirely upon closing of the issue, and expenses and any costs that are incurred, any work that's put in. If the bonds never come to market, don't close. The only fee that is non-contingent is the request of a municipal bond rating from Standard & Poor's Rating Services, because they actually will have to invest time and energy and will provide an actual rating, which whatever it is we ask for. So the resolution before you asks for the board to authorize the general manager to sign that contract and enter into that agreement. I'm an investment banker. I know that's a dirty word these days a little bit, but an investment banker structures loans where the source of funding is the capital markets versus a commercial bank where you might apply for your mortgage or your home loan. So my job is to put together an investment and then find an investor to match that investment, the investor who would be looking for a particular type of investment vehicle. As your general manager mentioned, we are enjoying a period of historically low interest rates, and it is still a bit volatile out there. Rates do move up and down. Today we saw a falling off of the 10-year treasury note. I don't know where it closed at, but last I heard it was off about 10, 12 basis points. But it's still, for 10-year federal treasury bond, it's 1.65%, 1.7. They've been hovering around 2% for a couple of months for a long time. These are just historic lows once again. The process is to compile the necessary data and information regarding the district and its finances, its legal authorization to go ahead and enter a financing, put those into documentation, and present that to the capital marketplace for consideration. Part of that process is to go through a rating process, such aspects as the pledge, what is the district promising to repay and how they're promising to repay it, the budget structure, the historical financial operations of the district, policies that have been adopted and implemented over time. And it's my opinion that the town of Discovery Bay Community Services District is an extremely well-run and managed district, and your financial statements bear that out. You have an excellent level of reserves historically. The board recently, I understand, took action to adopt a reserve policy that is quite positive. It's very strong compared to a lot of reserve policies that are out there. There's also been an investment policy adopted. All these are very good features for a credit rating, and I expect credit rating will come in very favorably, but time will tell, so we'll see how we do on that process. Once all that is put together and complete, it manifests itself in the product, as I would say, in terms of what you could show somebody would be a disclosure document called an official statement. It's similar to an offering prospectus in the equity world for stock, and we would send that out to investors and solicit investors to come and offer bids to buy the bonds. And investing public that we would be soliciting would include large mutual funds like American Century and Franklin Fund, or high net worth individuals, or large institutional investors. Generally speaking, those are the types of what I suspect the credit rating of the district will turn out to be. That's the audience I would be looking for. The benefit of that is these institutions buy in bulk, so to speak. They don't buy a couple hundred thousand here and there. They want to buy $1 million or $5 million or $10 million. So just like any product anybody sells, distribution is a very important part. And when you can capture an audience that has an appetite for high-grade credit, it'll just translate it to a lower interest rate for the district. Once we come back to the board, if tonight's motion or resolution is approved, and we bring the proposed structure back to the board, which would include such things as the amount, decisions would be made in concert with staff and the committee as to which projects will be included in the borrowing, and there's a lot of flexibility within that right up until the time we price. We would we'll have what's called a pricing day, and investors will place orders for their bonds, and we'll and part of that process is to delegate the authority to your general manager to basically, within certain parameters that the board will be aware of and set, that if the interest rates and the costs are within to the board's liking and meet the tests, that we'll go ahead and make the trade with the potential investors on this pricing day. And at that point is when the interest rates are locked in. Because we're talking about a large amount of money here, again, it's not like you just go to the bank and fill out a form. You're going to create and issue a security, much like a stock. It'll be a municipal bond. So that's the mechanism by which municipalities borrow their money. At that pricing, if it's to the district's liking, the results of the pricing, a bond purchase contract will be signed, and that is the actual agreement between my firm. Again, if we're fortunate enough to be approved, and the district that would set the terms of the sale and spell everything out. And the payments will be known at that point, the amount that will have to be budgeted every year, the amount of the borrowing. And from that point, it's a question of just completing the documents, much like purchasing a house. You enter a contract and then you finish all the documents and you close escrow. The same thing happens in our part of it, in our world. A couple of weeks after the pricing, the documents will be finished and we'll have the closing, at which point the money will be placed in the hands of a third-party trustee. The bond proceeds will be the town's bond proceeds, but they will be held by a third party, which is a security feature for bondholders. So the way that money gets expended and dispersed is if a cost is incurred, a requisition will be forwarded to the trustee, and the trustee will, if it's properly authorized by district staff, then the trustee will go ahead and disperse those funds to that person, be it, you know, contracting fees or architecture and design fees or what have you, whatever the cost of the project are. And from that point forward, we have a bond payment to make every year, twice a year actually, for 30 years. And there's some finer points in the structuring, which I don't know if tonight's the right night to go over those. I'd be happy to answer questions, but that's part of what the process will involve, that we're asking for your approval to have us move forward on, so we can just start those discussions. What is going to best meet the overall financing and financial objectives and needs of the district, so we can make sure we custom tailor a solution that's going to be just right for Discovery Bank. Don't know if I missed anything there. Just a kind of a quick overview. If it's the president's pleasure, we have to answer any questions.
Do you have any questions?
I hope you do.
I do. How's the rate structure decided, or, you know, how did you define that? I would have thought the bond might be flat. I don't see the increases in there. Is that normal? And
no, that's a great question. Because it's not like your mortgage, and in the financial world, a relatively small amount, a couple $100,000 is a small piece. It's a large loan. Generally speaking, there's probably not just one entity that's going to buy the whole thing. And so what we do is we appeal to different segments of the investing market. So for example, there are people out there, or funds, money market funds, for example, are very interested in very short-term loans. Mm-hmm. So there are bonds that will come due in 1, 2, 3 years, and it's broken down into pieces. Just like the difference between a 5-year, 10-year, and 30-year mortgage, the interest rates go up, that's a positively sloping yield curve. The longer the amount of time a loan is, the higher the interest rate is. The same thing is enjoyed by a municipal bond issuer. So what we attempt to do is capture that positively sloping yield curve, and so keep as much of the loan as we can in the earlier years, so you enjoy those lower interest rates, and on those maturities, and they blend into the overall cost of money. And on in the later years, as you might be able to tell, the preliminary structure that you have in front of you there in the proposal we put together, at this time, and it's just a draft, and it's just the beginning of the process of, you know, how are we going to ultimately market these, the more bonds you can sell going up that yield curve, the lower those interest rates will be. But at a certain point in time, you start to lose the shorter-term investor, and you need to look to the large, big investor that are going to be the mutual funds, the insurance companies of the world, and they like size. And so when you have 400,000, 500,000, 600,000 in maturities, you start to lose the interest of some people after a certain amount of time, and then you need to see out the larger investors. So that's when you see that there's one 30-year bond proposed in there. That's about $6 million, I think, mm-hmm. is one of the structures. So that's kind of the logic behind doing that.
How do you, how can you restrict the buyer pool to a U.S. Company or a U.S. Institution?
I'm not sure I understand the question.
Can a buyer be a foreign entity?
I believe so. Legal restriction to a...
There's no way to restrict that?
But the foreign entity wouldn't have any interest in buying
China to buy it.
Tax-free municipal bond, because by virtue of it being exempt from U.S. taxes,
okay,
the rates are lower than a comparable taxable bond. So that foreign investor would buy a U.S. taxable bond because they have no U.S. tax liability, and they're going to get a higher interest rate. So,
and the market is, where's the market? I mean, how do you get buyers to be interested in this? What market is it in?
It's the public. It's the municipal bond. Capital markets.
Okay.
And that's a specialty that my firm has. Okay. We have a trading desk with traders and salespeople that interact with potential investors in that marketplace. It's an over-the-counter market, okay, meaning that it takes place on the Bloomberg and over the phone. It's not a structured like the New York Stock Exchange market. That's, I have two clients in a sense. My firm has two clients, a municipal issuer like the district, mm-hmm, that we provide structuring services for essentially. And then my trading desk has their clients who are the investing world. Large bond funds, high net worth individuals, retail investors who might buy smaller amounts. And so we have a whole stable, if you will, of potential investors. And depending on the quality of the investment, so to speak, a high grade issue, which I suspect this will be, will solicit interest from a certain segment of the market that we know is interested in that sort of paper, as opposed to maybe a non-rated, speculative type of development type of bond, which you don't see so many of anymore, but the Belarus special tax financings. Those are investors that are a little more comfortable with a little higher risk and willing to be a little more speculative, and they want to have a higher yield. So we would probably not call them with your bond because won't be enough yield in it for them. The interest rates will be too low.
Rick, what do you think about the dollar amount? Is that adequate for that time frame?
The 13 to 14.7.
I want to come back and go in 5 years ago. Oh, man, we were off for 10 years.
If you turn to the third page of the report, if this is the proposed CIP, the Budget Review Committee's already seen this, mm-hmm, and it's in your packages this evening as part of the budget transmittal.
Right.
But the first page of that, if you look at the end of the 2012-13 budget column, the items that are listed in yellow, that would represent what we would do for the design of those projects.
Okay.
The projects that are in the dashed box, the 800,000, mm-hmm, that's where I think you have a little bit of flexibility to either include those projects in, because the board has already already has a reimbursement resolution in place, so we can go ahead and add those into the finance if we want, or we can choose to take them out or finance a part of them. It's all up to the board's decision to do that. If you turn the page, the items that are in yellow again, and they start from the top of the page up in the 15-16 year, then drop down into 13-14 and 14-15. That we plan on doing the design next year and rolling out and getting them all shelf ready. So beginning a year from now, basically, we're ready to award construction contracts on a lot of these projects. These are the projects that the master plan identified as being critical or high need, or the staff, the Veolia, our water contractor, and the water wastewater subcommittee, as well as the authors of the master plans, when we all met, felt that these were the projects that would be the candidates for moving forward with the financing. So those are the projects. The projects that are in the pink or the red there, those are the ones that are growth induced. And the projects that are in white, those are the projects that we would be doing regardless if we were doing this or not.
Okay.
And those would be financed through ongoing operational revenues.
It's the spread between the 13-1 and 14-7, the 800-800.
Yes, sir. It's the biosolids project that's currently in the way.
And this is. We cannot prepay this early. It has to be 10 years before we can pay it off.
That's a great question. No, there's no rules about that. The standard plain vanilla approach is, if we're discussing a 20 or 30 year financing, is 10 year. There's a 10 year period where you would not prepay the bonds, and that's what the market expects. Would you like to make it 5? We can make it 5, but the marketplace might charge you extra on your interest rate because that would not comply with what their standards for investing would be, so it would cost them more.
The reason I ask that is you're looking at over $6 million in interest for the 20-year period, mm-hmm, and $1.25 million a year. And my thinking is, should development start, and with the quick exit going up, you're going to have a cash windfall, and rather than pay $6.5 million in interest over 20 years, you could unload half of that. Can you pay half the bond off, or is it all?
No, you can pick and choose. In the standard structure, we're talking about an optional call feature, an option, just like you hear options are traded. It's not quite the same, but it's a similar concept. whatever, and that's part of what this process will be. That will be part of the process we're asking the board to approve us to commence.
Back to us.
Yeah.
And this is something that's actually come up in some very preliminary discussions with that exact point, that if there's a point in time to wait a windfall. So then it becomes a policy choice and some math, and it's tough to gauge precisely. It's not a science, but same bond issue, same day, one is a 10-year call, one is a 5-year call. What's the difference in interest rate going to be? And is that a price that the district would be willing to pay to have that option? So it might not be that expensive. The market might have a real hot time, and there's no difference. And so, sure, you know, let's do a 5-year call. And that's the kind of thing that we can kind of test the waters. We can decide right up to the very morning we're pricing. And as investors are calling and saying, oh, I don't buy these bonds, say, well, you know, how would you feel about 5-year call versus 10-year call? And if it's possible to have a shorter call, we can have it, you know, right up to that very time. But there, part of the process will absolutely be an analysis if that's what the board or the committee would like us to consider, to report back what some of the differences would be in structure A, structure B, structure C, and what it would be a shorter call.
The investors anticipate and expect when they're buying the bonds that they're going to have a certain, they're going to have a period that they're going to receive a return on. And if you call it shorter, there may be a cost to that we don't know that. But in discussing it previously with both Dan and Cameron and our committee, we felt that probably the 10-year would probably be about the right time, that when the development does start to move forward, that we would actually have a sum of money that had built up. It would take a number of years to get that. It wouldn't all happen at day one when they pull building permits. So it'll take a number of time or a number of years before we would be able to reach a substantial sum of money that we could then pay down, if you will, at the 10-year mark. We just thought that the 10 years is probably about the tipping point on that.
And just to kind of expand it a little bit, and I don't mean to get too technical, but it's an excellent question. $5 million is in the coffers out of nowhere that you weren't expecting. There is a device that, even though the call doesn't happen, and say that's 5 years from now, even though the call isn't in effect for 5 more years, there's a means to actually take that money and purchase federal securities, put them in an escrow account, and the amount of principal that you, $5 million that you put in plus the interest they earn, can be allocated to pay a certain amount of those bonds. And effectively, that's called a defeasance. You could effectively cancel a portion of your bond issue with cash.
It would defer
until that 10-year mark hits, and then it's already out of your hands. The trustee would then just go call those bonds on your hand.
The other thing, because we're really, if we're talking 10 years, we're really talking about 3.8 million, a higher percentage, because it obviously goes down as the interest amount is paid less. It's like your mortgage as you go through the loan. So we're probably talking about 3.8, maybe, this is just rough math on my part. But also, wouldn't there be a point where the premium you would pay for the 5-year buyout, I mean, there's a point where the X and Y cross, and it may or may not be feasible to do that.
Well, again, another excellent point. You know, I didn't mention on the outset, the issue would be tax exempt versus taxable. Like, you buy a treasury bond, you pay income tax on the interest. The local municipal governments are not. The federal government doesn't charge income tax, neither will the state, on the interest earned by an investor of these bonds. But they have to meet certain tests in order to qualify for tax exemption, one of which it has to be a capital project, essentially. If you'll buy something, land, you can't just borrow money and then use it to pay salaries. So, I'm sorry, currently, in the scenario I was just describing with putting money in the bank, interest rates are low. Interest rates are low to borrow, interest rates are low to invest. If you have $5 million and you put it in the bank, you're not going to earn very much interest on it, but your cost of the bonds, interest on them, might be too high, and the math might not work, and there's a situation where what's called negative arbitrage. The federal government would, and also, well, that's irrelevant. So then, sorry.
You get too excited.
You get me started on
stuff.
The technical stuff.
I know.
I love talking about it. So
my fault.
Again, it might be a math question. In 5 years, maybe that money would be better deployed in other ways. if the board feels confident that in 5 years there will be a windfall, and it's a policy choice that it's worth the price to pay now, because again, interest rates are very low, so the differential might not cost that much in dollars. It might be worth it. It might be an economic value to the district from a policy perspective to have that option. So there's many ways to skin that cat, so to speak. You can have a separate bond that just, you know, one amount that would be the only bond of the whole issue that's called in 5 years, and the rest is 10 years, so get a better rate on the rest of it. There's a myriad way to kind of, you know, present that. We can examine all of that, and a lot of it comes down to math and kind of speculating about the future.
Don't we set the terms of the sale of these? And there's just no negotiation on the buyer's side. They either take it or they don't, right? Your job is to prepare it so it's acceptable, so it meets market demand.
Correct. My job, in concert with the rest of the finance team, is to create a solution, and staff, of course, that will meet the needs of the district. So we can custom tailor a lot of the traditional features, right, such as we're talking about the call feature, or another feature, right, or another security feature, is the amount of coverage that's going to be provided, meaning that there needs to be a cushion in the amount of revenues you have available to pay your debt service every year. So for every dollar in debt service that you have to pay, you need to have $1.25 available after you pay your maintenance and operations. Maybe you want to make that one $1.10. You know, that's not a security to the investor, so there's a price for that. Doesn't mean you can't do it. But it's my job to advise the district what I think is the best product to put forth, so to speak, for the investor that will garner you the best interest rate and overall value for the finance. Mm-hmm.
What better deal than buying California in the state of California?
My city of Loyal. If the board has any more questions for Dan,
so
we can have Cameron come on up and go through the bond council process.
Thank you very much.
I share with you.
Well, good evening, Mr. President, members of the board. My name's Cameron Wiest, and yes, I'm a bond council, otherwise known as Sandman, because I'm sure to put you to sleep many, many times going through these legal documents. They are a bit daunting. But rest assured, I've done this many times in my career, and so I'm here as your counsel, as your legal advisor, in conjunct with your general counsel, to take you through the process with as little pain as possible, but also with full disclosure. It's very important in these proceedings that you are fully apprised of everything that you're about to do, and that each step of the way that you are also feeling protected by the nature of having somebody that's been in the market and done this for 20 plus years and advised several hundred clients in that regard. So that's my job, is to make sure that you all understand exactly what you're getting into each step of the way, make sure you know before you're authorizing your general manager or other senior staff to do things, that you have full knowledge and you feel that you're adequately prepared to make those decisions. The documents that you're going to get, you're going to be delivered, if you agree to go through this process, are, as I said, are going to be quite thick. We are going to try to do the best we can with staff reports. They're not going to be, there's no way we can, in a five-page or a three-page staff report, give you everything that you're going to need to know. So when we're here discussing the legal documents, I really would like at that meeting for you to, you know, try to be prepared and really read the documents. They are going to put you to sleep, there's no question, but it's important. It's very important, especially the preliminary official statement, which is what Dan referenced as what's akin to a offering statement for stock, because it takes everything that is Discovery Bay and it tries to tell the world what Discovery Bay is, what it's all about, what does the CSD do, what is the function, what does the board do, what decisions does it make, what is the water fund, what is the wastewater fund, what is the financial picture, what's the financial outlook, what is your plans, what are your goals, what are your policies, your investment policies, your reserve policies, you know, what are the demographics, what are your ratepayers like, are they, what kinds of age, what do they like to see, you want to have your document reflect your community. And it's very important that you take a prideful, and I know you will, but I'm just stating the obvious here, but nonetheless, it's important that you take part of that process. So as the drafts come out, your financial committee is going to look at those, but also we're going to try to get these to you in time so that everybody has an opportunity to look through these, ask the right questions, because it's not too late. There's no gun to your head with this process. We have to make sure that you are prepared, and that you, if you have questions, they have to be answered. That's just in full disclosure for SEC purposes, which I'm to guide you through. You have to make sure that you feel very comfortable with the documents, because they are going to be your documents. They're not mine. They're not Dan's. They're your documents, and they have to reflect what you want them to reflect. And if they don't, they're inadequate, in my opinion. And that's why, from an SEC full disclosure and a regulatory standpoint, it's called 10b-5. It's an anti-fraud opinion that I have to provide. And I'm going to say, in my opinion, to give you that opinion, I'm relying on you to have read everything, reviewed everything, and gotten back to your staff and to me with questions, and if you have concerns, certainly concerns. So that's kind of an overview. That's my role in this, as I said. And ultimately, I'm going to be responsible to prepare all the documents, get a draft of a staff report in conjunction with your general manager together, that's going to give you enough information, as I said, to be able, on the night of approval, to understand what you're doing, but it's going to be up to you to do the rest. And so that, we have the 20th, the meeting coming up on the 20th. If you decide to go forward tonight, we have to take some actions on the 20th to start the process in motion. Okay. After that meeting, if you still want to go forward, then we're going to come back. The plan would be in July, your mid-July meeting, and maybe your August meeting. And that meeting is going to be the night when the documents are going to be up for form approval. What that means is you're going to actually give your general manager, senior staff, the president, vice president, opportunity to sign off once Dan goes through the final process of getting the rates locked, getting all that stuff locked in. Your general manager is going to be able to sign the bottom line for you. And it's that point that the bond issue can close. So I would be happy to take you through the whole documentation process, but I don't know that worth our time tonight, because we're going to have to do this anyway. And as I said, I'm going to do the best I can to prepare you. But if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them. So.
And for me.
Okay.
I'd like to open it up to public comment, questions.
Go ahead, Mr. Beast.
Is this the first time that the board has had an opportunity to discuss the certificates of participation?
Yeah.
In lieu of spending $15,000 this evening, I would recommend that, I'm opposed to any of this, but you've got six scenarios, from $13 million to $20 million, which has just been glossed over. You have a recommendation of some projects that need to be done, and I'm sure they need to be done. You're looking at, how much is the issuance, the bond issuing company charging in commissions? Well, it's $110,000 to $150,000. I don't think that's out of line for what they're doing, but you need to discuss this. My recommendation would be to have a study session. I don't know if you've had a study session at all, but it would allow you the opportunity to do exactly what they're saying they're going to do and take you through this, and you're going to read it all. Well, they're asking you to make this $13 million investment or obligation 60 days from now. And if I know, if I was sitting there, I wouldn't be comfortable doing that this evening. I would recommend that you have a study session, bring these fellows back, sit down, have a chance to talk about all these, have the manager explain the different projects that need to be done, because if you're investing this money, what happens if something of these projects need to be done again? How are you going to maintain them? There's a whole series of questions, because you've obligated the funds, and now you don't have that revenue coming in already. It's gone. This is a big, big decision, and evidently, Discovery Bay's never done this before, so it's even more appropriate just to slow it down just a little bit. I know timing, interest rates, etc. You know, one of the questions I had, why is somebody going to buy these bonds when the interest rate is so low now? What's the enticement? Why am I going to get a return right now at this rate? So, I I just wanted to bring that to your attention and have you think about it. You don't have to make a decision this evening, but it may pay you to be, especially now that I know for sure that this is the first time you guys had a discussion about this. You can have a study session with all five of you together. But it's up to you.
If I may address some of Mr. Pease's comments, the board has met a number of times and discussed these projects. They have been before the board, before the public, many, many times. We've had study sessions on both the master plans. The Water and Wastewater Subcommittee of Vice President Graves and Director Tetro have been discussing this for quite some time. It was discussed at the most recent budget review committee meeting. In order to move the project forward, I believe that the issue with relative to the scenarios that were presented are just those. They're nothing but scenarios. I was pretty specific in my staff recommendation. What I would be looking for, and I think the board is probably would probably concur with the number between 13.1 and 14.7 billion, not the $20 million. The $20 million was a scenario if we wanted to throw everything into it, including the projects that would be growth induced. I'm not going to recommend we do that. I know the board's not going to recommend we do that. You have to get started somewhere. By taking this action tonight, the only thing we're obligated, the only cost we could possibly be out is the $15,000 for Standard & Poor's. I believe that we are at a point in time. We have some serious infrastructure needs, especially with our oxidation ditch and our lift station W and our influent lift station, getting those projects. Those were highly critical. We could sit and wait two more weeks. However, I would recommend that we move forward. The process can stop at any point in time that the board so desires. You can continue to, you can have a study session on it. You can have a study session on the documents. That can take place at the board's pleasure at any point in time in the future. But I would continue to recommend that we move forward with the recommended action tonight. I would like to add one more recommended action to that. I would like to recommend that the Water and Wastewater Subcommittee, since these projects are water and wastewater related, be the committee that would work with the financing committee on that with Vice President Graves and Director Tetro. So that would be my only change to the recommended action for this evening.
Go ahead.
I appreciate Mr. Pease's comments, but I think he was misled a little bit in saying that this hadn't been discussed before, and I think that staff was pretty clear on at least discussing. We have discussed multiple times what projects that we want to include and how we want to include that. There has been numerous meetings with regards to the representatives of the board on this issue, as was assigned by the president for us to be part of that committee. Even in the meeting we had tonight prior to this meeting with that committee, we did discuss the possibility of having a workshop. So everybody was very clear on it. I understand the concern that Mr. Pease brought up with regards to $15,000. It seems to be, I understand what that concern is. But I would want to reiterate, these things have been discussed, and it may not be a bad, I mean, we want the board, the entire board, to completely understand the process. I still have things to understand about it. I mean, even though I've been to three meetings already with them, I think it's a good idea to have a session where the whole board can, call us maybe a special meeting, a workshop meeting, where we would invite these gentlemen back to go into more depth and more detail, so everybody's comfortable. And I think Cameron did a great job of explaining it. That's really his goal, I just wanted to say I didn't want it to give the impression that we haven't been looking into this, and that we haven't, the two of us are on a committee that have been looked into the depths of it. So I just wanted to add that.
Yeah, well, just clarification, I wasn't worried about the projects. I'm sure they need to be done. It's the funding mechanism and that whole process, so that you understand what you're obligating the community to. That's where I would go.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I both on this funding committee, subcommittee, and I'm on the budget and the capital, so I'm one of these capital things, and we're pretty sure we know, we absolutely know what has to be done, so we have to spend this money, and the only way we can do it without bankrupting the ratepayers is go this route.
Well, I don't disagree at all.
Yeah.
I just wanted to make sure the rest of the board has your understanding.
Yes. I just have one issue, one thing. I'll be on the committee, but, you know, I have an upcoming surgery coming up at some point. And if I'm not able to do that, I would like to recommend that Director Simon is my backup for that. If that's under the, that's a police department. So,
yeah. That's up to you.
Yeah, I think that's going to be great. Any more public comments, questions?
I would like to make a motion. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm okay with I think the $15,000, we need to move forward on that. And I know the criticality of our systems, and I don't want to cause any delay on that. We can go into the bond structure at a later date if we so decide to have a workshop to make sure everybody's got their final questions answered. I think you all have a pretty basic understanding of the bond market and the commission structures or the fee structures. But I would say we should move forward on this also.
With that being said, I'd like to make a motion. I would move that we authorize the general manager to, one, enter into agreement with KND, and two, enter into agreement with the Weiss Law Firm, three, enter into agreement with Standard & Poor, and four, that we adopt the resolution 2012-11, and five, that Director Tetro and Vice President Graves be assigned to that committee with Director Simon as a alternate.
I'll second it.
Any public comment? All right, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
The next item on the agenda this evening, before I go there, I want to thank the board and Dan and Cameron for coming to the meeting today. I know Dan left his house about 5 o'clock this morning to make it up here and drove up instead of flew up, so appreciate that, Dan. Sure. Cameron, thank you very much.
Way to go, Oakley.
Okay, moving on. The next item is an update of the commercial user accounts. Director Simon requested this come back to the board. The district has 1,900 metered residential water hookups and a little over 100 commercial accounts in town. All the residential water meters are read electronically through a wireless mesh network that transmits the data back here to the district office. Commercial accounts are not part of that mesh network for the most part because the mesh network exists only in that part of town where the water meters are over in the Discovery Bay West area. When the financial auditors were preparing our FY 2010-11 audit, which you authorized this evening, they notified staff that they had a number of commercial users that they had that appeared that had not been previously been billed. As it turns out, and after an extensive investigation by staff, there were 17 commercial accounts that had not been billed, ranging from a low of $41.17 up to $26,000, and a little over $26,000. The total amount of the billing was $62,000. Staff has generated invoices. We've mailed them out. They went out last week. Two weeks ago, we do not consider those users to be delinquent. We consider them to be current based upon the fact that they were not previous, that those meters, while installed, unfortunately had not been previously read. Additionally, there are three accounts that have balances that would appear to be high. One of them is the Discovery Bay Shopping Center for $38,000, one for Lakeview Business Plaza for a little over $10,000, in the Pilate Farms property, which is the athletic club, for over just a little over $16,000. The Discover Bay Shopping Center, I believe it's in the Hoffman Family Trust, is paying pursuant to an agreement. That balance has been knocked down from, I believe, approximately $60,000 to its current balance today, and they are paying currently on time with that, pursuant to that agreement. Lakeview Business Plaza continues to reduce their balance, however, not pursuant to the previously agreed upon terms that were discussed, I believe, 2 or 3 years ago. Director Tetra was involved in those meetings. I would like to note that they have paid $7,500 within the last 30 days. Pilate Farms is in arrears. They continue to pay short, and they have a balance of $16,167. Staff has mailed to Lakeview Business Plaza, as well as Pilate Farms, pursuant to the district policy and PUC requirements, that their accounts are delinquent and that their water may be shut off unless an acceptable payment structure, unless the payment is received or an acceptable payment structure is negotiated. Attached to the report is a listing of all of the commercial users in Discovery Bay. The report is somewhat, it's called an aging report, and unfortunately, that's just what the system calls it. But this is just a list of all of the current large water users in Discovery Bay. And so I do have at this point in time, one of the things that took place earlier this year is we transitioned from quarterly billing on our commercial users to monthly billing for our commercial users. And so some of them are used to paying quarterly and not monthly with us. But I'm pleased to note that in customers that are 30 days delinquent total $2,700, and that's not uncommon for a 30-day. 60 days is a little bit more, $6,600. And then the 90-day delinquent, that represents the three primarily. And it's I really would not reference that the Discovery Bay Shopping Center is delinquent, because they are paying pursuant to an agreement, although it shows up as 90 days delinquent. And so we do have that information, and everybody else is pretty much paying according to their invoices.
Yes. Based on current agreement, whatever that is, when will the Discovery Bay Shopping Center be paid?
I believe late next year.
Why?
There was an agreement that was entered into between the Hoffman Company and the district. I believe it was 2 years ago.
Before you?
I don't believe it was a board action. I believe it was a staff action.
Point of order. Under your ordinance, you specifically give the authority to the general manager to enter into acceptable payment plans.
Okay.
For going
for a large amount like that. There's no dollar amount over we give him?
Not in the ordinance, sir.
The question I would have to ask is, why was this not reflected? I've been asking this question for 2 years, and I've been getting a runaround for 2 years now. Tonight I find out we've had an agreement going this whole time, and now I find out about it tonight. Why?
Director Simon, I have to share your frustration on this. I found out about it approximately 2 weeks ago when I got the aging report and noticed it was on there. I was under the impression that the primary delinquencies were the Pilate Farms property, as well as Lakeview Business Plaza. And like I indicated, they're not necessarily, with Discovery Bay Shopping Center, they're not necessarily delinquent because they're paying pursuant to their agreement. I believe it's $3,000 a month, or $3,000 quarterly, plus their monthlies.
And the other one, the business partner, he negotiated that 2 years ago, and it was being paid off. They just stopped paying. We let that negotiate.
Yeah. Well, no, that I don't really recall. I don't know what the balance was when that started, but they are down to, like I said, $10,000 at this point.
They're around $50,000.
So they've made substantial progress.
Yeah, they have. Yeah,
okay.
But
expected them to be current by now.
I would have too. However, we did mail them their notices that their accounts are delinquent to those two property owners.
But what remedy do we ask for? I mean, it's okay to mail the notice, but what are we going to do about it if they take the notice and throw it to her?
Well, we, pursuant to the district policy, we at that point, we have to send them out pursuant to the policy and to our ordinance, as well as pursuant to, I believe, PUC.
No, not in the case of commercial.
Okay. Pursuant to our policy, that we have to give them a notice that they're delinquent, and then I believe it's 15 days.
Yes, 15 days.
They will
receive. We're
going to
give them a
48-hour
notice.
Okay. So we do have the leverage to then shut them off, yes.
So when are we going to do this?
Well, they've already been mailed out.
Okay, when do we do the follow-up?
We have to wait the 15 days.
The other one that I'm really concerned about is Athletic Club. They're broke, and to just let them get in deeper every month. You know, it's one thing, we meter these people in Lakes and Lakeshore. They don't pay their bill, we shut them off, they have to pay. And big business opens up when we care if they're dancing hours.
Well, we do have a little bit of flexibility with the Pilate property in that it is for sale. And if we decide to turn the water off on them, if that's the action that we move into, they would obviously have to become current. If they make payment arrangements, we sent them their bill, we've asked them to contact us so we can make arrangements to get a current. If they don't get a current, they're not willing to get a current, we can either shut it off and we can also leave the property. So we would be guaranteed one way or another to get our money.
Well, I don't want to leave the property because I just give them a loan.
How much is their bill on a month?
I got a question while I was looking up that too, or a statement. I don't know if we're going into a negotiation with Pilate, the athletic center. I'm not sure if we want to take an action where we shut their water off and tick them off, or they go, screw you. We don't want to deal with you either.
This report doesn't show what the amount of the report that I have does not show the amount of the invoice. I do have their last amount paid. That was $1,700.
Well, we bill them every month, can we tell we bill them?
Yeah, we do. I just don't have that in front of me. We bill them monthly now. I just don't have that information in front of me.
Did a bill go out this month? Can you look up what the bill was?
I'm trying to
learn
the system too.
Yeah, okay. I mean, I don't mean to be shortly the Rick, but this is ridiculous. This has been going on for so long now, and it's kind of like we have every reason we'll not collect it. When we do, we're dying for revenue. And we have tens of thousands of dollars owed to us on that project.
Yes, we understand.
What have we done to correct the fact that the meters were never read? How have we changed our systems and our procedures? How what are we doing differently now?
They're being read. With respect to the Hoffman property, I do have a meeting scheduled with the representative that would be my contact person for that. He is on vacation next week, and I do have a meeting with him to discuss this issue specifically for 2 weeks from tomorrow.
Do we have a calendar of our meter reading?
Yes.
Can we follow that? Within what, one day, or is it consistent?
Within 5.
Excuse me?
Within 5.
Okay. So is it the first through the 5th of each month? What is it?
Yes.
We bill on the first through the beginning to the end of the month. So we do our meter reading at the beginning of the next month.
Sure.
We have one person to do that meter reading. Mm-hmm. So if we have a water leak or he's called out on another emergency of some sort, he can always come back and read the meters later, but we have to address the primary issue at the time. So there is some times where it might not always be that day, but it might end up being the next day.
Right.
And so we go on the, you say the first, and your bill is due when? When you send a bill, when is it due?
30 days?
It's a 30 day.
Wait. You give 30 days to make a payment?
It's a 30 day. You have
Isn't that 30, right?
But it's a 30-day reading. But I mean, when you send the bill, they get the bill on the first few times your bill is paid full by. It's usually 10 days or 12 days, isn't it? You don't give another 30 days to pay the bill.
It's always due on the 25th, or what is it?
Yeah, something like that. 20th or the...
I don't have a copy of a residential water bill in front of me. I'm sorry.
So can we put this back on the next agenda and get all the information on the policy and do something accurate here?
Yes, we can.
Before this doesn't answer anything.
And then just to go back, I just want to understand the mesh system. How is that system monitored? I understand that the wireless connectivity and all this stuff, but how do we know that that's accurately taking measurements? How do we calibrate that and guarantee that those numbers are consistent?
On the wireless?
On the wireless system.
Virgil's going to have to address that.
We go out there periodically and we look at it. Has a every meter has a register to it.
Right.
And what it's doing is taking that register number, meaning the usage, sending that out through another device wirelessly. It's a radio connected to that meter. You check that with the
mechanical reading?
Yes, you do that.
We
have an analog meter, and then it sends a signal up. I have a digital interpretation of that, and it should be very, very close to the exact same, right?
Okay, that's correct.
All right, and we have a mechanism.
We recently had a meter over in Discovery Bay West. There were actually a couple of meters over in one of the neighborhoods, wherein they weren't reading accurately. And so we went back and we did exactly what Virgil was referring to, went back and had the meters reread. And in fact, we owed those few people, we owed them a little bit of money back. It wasn't a lot, but it was a little bit.
I would just say we have audit procedures in place on a minimum annual basis to confirm that our systems are accurate.
Well, we know how many, I believe we now know how many accounts we have. It's unfortunate that there were 17 that we did not know about on the commercial side. So we know how many bills need to go out each month on the residential side as well as the commercial side. So that's, we know when the readings come in, because we get the meter logs on the residential, they come in electronically. On the commercial, they get brought into us, and so they get interconnected.
Where can I find a copy of our policy for water meter reading so that I can know that all of our customers are being on the same system or as far as the same billing cycle and measurement? We have an ordinance, and you're just giving a copy of it? Not to that, not right now, but.
Should have it before.
All right, I want to.
We have the number.
Immediately, yeah.
Go ahead, Mr. Simon.
Rick, you said something about 17 other users. We have 17 other delinquents also, or just the three? Large water.
What I was referring to, Director Simon, is that when the auditors notified us that there were some accounts that appeared that were not being billed, we went back and investigated and determined that there were 17 commercial accounts that, for one reason or another, had not been billed. Unfortunately, had not been billed since the meters were installed. So we went back. We went back. We identified who they are, who the owners are. We know that by the register number on the meter. We generated invoices for each of them, and we broke down the invoices. They determined on the rates in place at the time, basically how long the meter's been in place, by how many months it's been. Extrapolate the years, assuming everything remains relatively constant, and we mailed out those 17 invoices a little over 2 weeks ago. Yes, it is at the bottom of the fourth paragraph. It was $62,137,000. They ranged from $41 to the highest was $26,000.
Plus the three we talked about.
That does not include the three we've been discussing.
What is the acceptable percentages of outstanding accounts receivable for water usage? What is the district's policy, or do you guys have a percentage?
Well, there's always going to be a charge for accounts that you're going to write off. People have had a balance and they move out of town and can't locate them. You're always going to have some of those. Right now, other than the three we've been discussing, $11.87 is 90 days delinquent, 30 cents is 90 days delinquent, $2.92 is 90 days delinquent, $2.92, $8. They're relatively minor numbers with the exception of those three. Everybody is relatively current on the large water users.
Well, we've got, you just totally got 100 grand ones that aren't current.
I don't necessarily consider the 17 that had not been billed previously as being delinquent because they had never been billed before.
I'll grant you, but do you think they're going to write you a check to 60 grand?
We have asked them to contact us, and I'm having the meeting with the Hoffman Company, which is the largest, who received the largest of the bills, if you will. And I'm meeting with them, like I said, 2 weeks from tomorrow. With respect to the other ones, we've already received a couple of phone calls asking a couple of questions. And at this point in time, they have a date that they need to respond by, and then we've asked them to contact us.
And what are we going to do about following up this so that we don't have to pretty much ask for this on the board again? I mean, this is a lot of money.
Well, I can assure you that this is not something that is, this is as painful for us as it is for you. It's not something that we're very happy about it as well. I think that it is definitely on our radar screens. In fact, I know it's on our radar screens. I continue to keep the board updated as necessary on it. So,
can you give us an update in next month? And we'll say we give you some time here to 15 day. You have a 15 day period here, so I would say that we in our July meeting that we get an update on progress.
That would actually be a good time because it's the second. It's July the 18th, sure. I think, and that would give. That gives the 30 days. It gives the people that are on the 15 days to find out if they've paid. We can come back with a more comprehensive report and see where we're at that point in time. I can tell you that Dina has been working very hard on this along with myself, and it's a very frustrating situation for everybody.
It's a heck of a surprise for a property owner. So. Okay. All right. Any more comments? Any public comment?
No, there's no action on that.
No action. Okay.
The next item I have for the board this evening is to approve the purchase of a trailer-mounted trash pump for processing wastewater. After some discussions with our district wastewater engineer, Gregory Harris with Herwick Engineering, we are going to change our recommendation from the Griffin Corporation pump to the Pioneer Prime pump. It's the third proposal in the package. It is a little bit more money. It's $40,480 versus $38,000, but it's a much more efficient and it's a much better constructed with a longer, we anticipate to have a much longer life than the other one. And so staff would be recommending that that the board authorizes purchase to Gerlich Mitchell for the Pioneer Prime Pump. What is it?
I was just pointing out.
For not to exceed an amount of $41,000. This year's current budget has $20,000 for a trash pump. That trash pump was initially anticipated to be a used trash pump, and it was not going to be sound attenuated. And so I asked Virgil Caney to look into new pumps that are sound attenuated, that are meant to be in the residential area versus a non-sound attenuated pump, which is more for an industrial area. The pump that we have currently is, if we purchased it used back in 1999, we'll continue to keep it in service to use down at the plant, and it won't be deployed in the residential neighborhoods unless it's absolutely necessary to do so. We're recommending that $20,000 come from the current year CIP, which is already budgeted, and we would recommend that the balance come from the Salinity project because we believe we have sufficient funds in there to cover project, the work we're doing on for that project right now.
Are these American made?
This, the one we're proposing is made in Oregon.
That's close.
All the parts are made at home.
I'm sure. Make sure you get parts for it. Okay. Any questions?
Virgil, you did the research on this, on all of them.
We use the Pioneer. We've rented Pioneers from Hertz, and because we had to put a trash pump in a residential area, and we had to rent it for 24, 48 hours. And I know that I ran a hot rod. I mean, as the ones without sound, it's very loud. The homeowner would probably take a shotgun to it. And so we've taken some out there, and the Pioneer one works very well.
And just so the board knows, public knows, these pumps are to bypass wastewater. We have a lift station that needs to be worked on, and we need to bypass. That's what this is for. So it's a very important piece of equipment to have. And the one we have, like I said, was purchased in 99, and it was used then. And so the reliability is uncertain, and that's why we've been renting it.
I'd like to make a motion that we purchase this pump for not to exceed $41,000 from Gerling.
I'll second. Any public comment? Okay. Is there a second?
I thought you already got a second.
Second.
He did.
Did you second? Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
The next item in front of the board this evening, in fact, the next two items are agency comment requests from the county. The first one is the Sandy Coast Shopping Center, the owner's Pacific Bowie Tracy 2. Essentially, what they're looking to do is have a retroactive development permit. They lease space to the Byron Inn Cafe, as well as the Matsuyama sushi restaurant, without getting all the proper approvals for it. So they need to add chairs as part of the development permit. They are seeking to move from 160 chairs for restaurant use to 218, leaving an additional 24 for potential future restaurants. And as we've done in the past, the board has any comments, negative comments, no negative comments, we'll send a letter off to the county.
No negative.
Yeah, sewage, water.
That's additional sewage capacity.
No negative comment.
You can match in the motion.
Any public comment?
I would move that the board send a letter with no action taken, no comment.
All second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
The next
item. I would do the same on the second, on the next item also.
You want me to give the staff report?
You don't have to. Is anybody here from that residence?
I reached out to them and never heard back.
Okay. But based on the information given, I would move that we send a letter with no comment.
Any public comment?
The only comment
I would have, from the homeowner association, would be to assume that there's no warehousing product in the garage. Like, this looks like it's just nothing but a paper mill. That's what they say.
I agree. That's why I said based on the information given us.
I'm sure if they were standing there, they'd say it's nothing but a paper mill, no matter what's in their garage.
We spoke to the planner on this application, and one of the conditions of approval is that they do not have any product stored on site.
Okay.
Need a motion and a second.
They already have the motion and second.
All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
There you go. No report from the president tonight. Any director's comments?
Yeah. Update. The budget committee met on the 31st, last Wednesday, for our final meeting, and the purpose of the meeting was to go over the upcoming budget before it's presented to the board for modification, discussion, and implementation. All five members were present, and that's pretty much all we did that day.
Good job. Thank you. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'd like to speak to Measure S and the failure of Measure S and reiterate to my fellow board members the issues that are at hand here, and that is the three model against the four model that Mr. Mankin spoke about earlier. And what that means to us is that Brentwood is pushing very hard. Brentwood has four representatives on the board. Oakley has three. There are two independents. Brentwood is pushing hard, and they think that they're trying to convince other people that the best way to go is four station model, because that puts four firemen in Brentwood, because that leaves two stations open in Brentwood. And when in fact it doesn't serve the district equally, because out here we would have a engine show up and they wouldn't be able to do anything. You have to have at least three men on the engine to be able to do anything. So I would encourage the masses out there in the audience, as well as my fellow board members, to please contact the representatives from Oakley, being Mayor, our former Mayor Anderson, Mayor Romick, Kevin Romick, and also Jim Frazier, and let them know how important it is for us to support the three engine model and the three, it's a 3-3, just think of it as 3-3, three stations, three men on the engine, as well as Mr. Kinney, who is the independent, and Ms. Morgan, who also is an independent. I would urge you strongly to reach out to them, go on the ECCFPD website, get their contact information, and tell them that you would like them to support the 3-3 model, because otherwise Brentwood will get somebody to defect, and we'll be with even worse coverage than we're going to be, because Measure S did not pass for whatever. So we're down to 27 firemen covering this large geographical territory from the 48 that we had before.
Anything, Jim?
No.
Okay. All right, go ahead.
Okay. Thank you. I've got three reports for you this evening. The first one under tab I-1 is the Sewer System Management Plan, otherwise known as the SSMP. It needs to be submitted electronically to the state by Friday. This is a draft report. There's no action necessary for the board other than to let you know that it's been completed. Okay. I thought I got all those.
You leave your cheat toys around again.
Anyway, the SSMP is the document that we would be following relative to sewer system, or SSOs, sanitary sewer overflows, and the state wants to make sure that we have a process in place, and that we follow their rules and regulations, and so that's what this accomplishes. If you have any questions, we'll be happy to answer them. The next item tomorrow, Virgil and Bernie will be attending the California Regional Water Quality Control Board meeting regarding the public hearing for our NPDES permit. I think we're pretty early in the agenda, if I recall, and staff recommendation is to raise the limit on the NTU, so that is good for us, and if you have any questions on that, Virgil and or Bernie can address those for you.
Sorry, what's the time of that meeting?
8:30.
Okay.
It's in Rancho Cordova, if you'd like to attend. I can get you the address. It's on that cover sheet there.
I see it there. Thank you.
The third item is the preliminary draft of the fiscal 2012-13 operating capital improvement program budget. We will be having a workshop on the budget next Wednesday evening at 6:30. This is just being transmitted to you this evening, because while the members of the Budget Review Committee have seen it in a rough draft form, this is more of a final draft form. And probably the biggest changes you're going to notice are the program descriptions, as well as moving the one-year CIP to a five-year capital outlook. So with that, I don't have any other items other than to say Virgil and I save some heat, save some ducts. Virgil saved some ducts this morning. He actually climbed into the manhole, directly into the storm drain, and saved 8 little ducklings. Hmm. And that's all we have. That's all I have for this evening.
I have a question, and I picked an inopportune time to walk out. Oh, 8:30. Do you anticipate this public hearing before the Water Quality Board? I read the complaints. Two of them. Actually, one of them was in favor of us, which I thought was really sweet. The other two were from the usual people. Do you anticipate there to be any problem, or is there going to be any public comment by us prior to them hearing this, or are we just there to observe?
We are there to show support for the staff's recommendation, which is to move the permit forward as it's outlined in your packet. There is also further back in the packet, there is a listing of the concerns that were brought up in those letters, or issues that were brought up in those letters. And in each and every one of those, their concerns were dismissed by state staff. And so we fully anticipate that the permit will be authorized tomorrow.
Okay, because what I received via email didn't indicate that staff had even responded to the complaints.
Was it our staff? It's the regional board staff.
But like I said, unless I didn't read it, I thought I read through, you know, as much fun as it was, I believe that I read through not only the concerns, but the responses by those three complaints. And I didn't see where it indicated that state was ignoring those or was going to choose not to have those affect them. I'm probably wrong. Is this the same thing we received via IRMA email?
This came to us, I believe, last week. The last...
I had to go to the contra costa section of to read.
Correct.
That, but I didn't wasn't given any additional information.
There was a link that had response to comments. It's about 8 or 10 pages from the back. So if you read those comments,
yes,
in response to the letters that were sent in by the California Sport Fishing Association, you'll see that the staff comments from the State Water Board did not concur with their suggestions.
Okay, good. So, and who's going up there tomorrow?
Virgil and Bernie.
Okay.
So, just to remind the board, I think Kevin might have stepped out for a second. We do have the board workshop on a week from tonight for the budget.
Council, please.
Thank you, President, board members. Just to inform those who were not present, tonight's special meeting at 6:30 has been canceled and will be rescheduled for the next regular meeting. Thanks.
Any other committee updates? All right, we've had correspondence, public records requests. So it looks like public records are pretty light lately. So any future agenda items?
I just want to make sure that the board
Yeah, it'll be on the July. Carol probably already has it noted for the forecast sheet. Mm-hmm. So
All right, well, thank you all for attending tonight. I will now adjourn the meeting.